This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. You are listening to a special edition iFanboy podcast on Son of Batman.
It's not time to make a change. Just relax and take it easy. You're still young. That's your fault. There's so much you have to know. Find a girl, settle down. If you want, you can marry. Look at me. I am old, but I'm happy. I was once like you are now, and I know that it's not easy to be calm when you found something going on.
Hello, welcome to the special edition iFanboy podcast on Son of Batman. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I'm here with Paul Montgomery.
Yep.
And rounding out the iFanboy brain trust is Ryan Haupt.
I'm getting ready to help some stuff. It's going to happen.
We are the iFanboy Animation Brain Trust. We come together to talk about the DC Universe animated original films. Also, once by accident, we did a Marvel movie, which was a mistake.
Yes.
This was the, or as I think, because I counted my DVDs before the show, the 20th release in the DC Universe animated original line of films. It's going back, way back to 2008 or 9, around there. It's been a long time. A lot of films, a lot of water under the bridge. This is an adaptation of Grant Morrison's Batman and Son storyline, the very first storyline he did way back when he started his run on Batman.
Grant Morrison and Andy Kubert.
Yeah. Yes, and reintroduced Damian into the DC Universe. Damian, of course, was conceived in the, at the time, out of continuity story, Batman, Son of the Demon, conceived by Bruce Wayne and Talia, and then he was brought back by Grant Morrison. We'll get into the wider implications of that later. So this is the second film that takes place, third if you really want to count the end of Flashpoint, but the second film takes place in the new 52 shared universe that they're doing for these films. So we're also going to talk about that later. So this is a weird mix.
It's a semi-sequel to Justice League War, or at least it takes place within that continuity.
Right.
Same voice for Batman, same character design.
It's the same, it's a pre-New 52 story taking place in a post-New 52 world. Same cast, or same principal actors as before, as Paul just mentioned. This was not a good movie.
No, it wasn't.
This made me really wish that we did Riff Tracks style talkovers that people could listen to while they watch the movie, because I think that would help. I think we have funny things we could say during it that would improve the overall experience.
It was really not good. And I, you know, anyone who listens to this show knows we don't come on here and just gleefully rip these movies apart ever. We usually quite like them. In fact, we all like Justice League War when no one else did, and we got a lot of shit for that. But this was really bad. And I just, in almost every way, it was really, this is a bad story. I don't think there was much of a story. To begin with, it wasn't. I was watching it, thinking about the Batman Under the Red Hood, the last sort of Batman and Robin movie we had, and how tightly plotted that was, and how just wonderful it was. And this was
a really good one.
This was the exact opposite. And I think a lot of it starts with, well, the script is a problem. We'll get to that in a minute. The voice acting was pretty terrible. The Jason O'Mara was, I think, a fine Batman in the context of Justice League when he wasn't carrying the whole movie. Mm-hmm. But here, there's no emotion or emoting in his voice.
And this is a really important Batman story to have a fully dimensional Batman.
And Jason O'Mara's a really good actor. It just he speaks like Bat-Robot. And it's a perfect counterpoint to Thomas Gibson's Deathstroke, who was even worse.
That would Greg from Dharma and Greg,
Or from Criminal Minds.
Criminal Minds, right? Yeah, he and I couldn't place him as I was watching, so I had to look it up afterwards. But that is one of the worst vocal performances I've heard in any of these, or in really anything. And part of it is the performance. Part of it, I think, the direction was just off. Like,
which is strange because Andrew Romano is such a great voice director.
It just seemed like a lot of it was just on autopilot, or like the actors were never in the same room, you know, working off each other. Right. So there was no chemistry. It just a lot, especially the Deathstroke stuff, felt like he was doing a cold reading.
It felt like it was a table read. They're just recording the table read because there was no actual acting going on. It was just reading of lines. Ryan, what did you think of those two particularly?
Utterly forgettable. I would say that the one voice I thought worked really well was Alfred.
Yeah. I thought there's a couple that worked well. I thought Sean Maher's Nightwing was really good.
The problem I had with Nightwing was not the voice. The voice was fine, but they made Nightwing character act like he was constant. I mean, I liked what they tried to do with it. They tried to make him like constantly moving and very dynamic in relation to Batman,
right?
But it just failed that he looked like he was either fidgeting or throwing his hands up in the air for no reason. It didn't work. Did you guys like pick up on that at all?
I did not pick up on that, to be quite honest with you. My attention wandered a lot during this movie.
I actually was pretty focused.
Well, because you're stuck in Panama and there's nothing else to do.
Well, I think
I would refill my glass from time to time, but I could do that without really looking away.
I think that's part and parcel though with the whole thing about the characters just don't, or the actors don't feel like they're in sync with each other. Right. You know, you have a really disengaged Batman. Just really kind of emotionless, colorless kind of performance. And then Sean Mayer's performance, a little bit more lively. And
I also thought that could make sense. Marina Bakarin for Talia was pretty good too. I don't think she was great, but I thought the thing is, when you were bouncing off these, it's what you like to call around the FMW offices the Clerks 2 effect, which you put a real actor in the midst of a bunch of people who are not actors, that real actor looks even better by comparison. I thought, by comparison, Marina Bakarin's Talia was good, and so was the kid who played Robin, actually, Damian Stewart Allen.
Yeah, he was fine, and that was contrasted with the Man-Bat's family. What's his real name?
Kurt Langstrom.
Kurt Langstrom.
Yeah, Kurt Langstrom. He and his whole family were about as flat as...
Which is strange, because Xander Berkeley was Kurt Langstrom, and he's a really good actor, too. I mean, it was bizarre. And like you said, Paul, it sounded like they just recorded the table.
Well, it's
the first cold reading of these lines.
They were doing a podcast.
A lot of great, you know, TV actors and everything, and some of them film actors, but voice acting is a completely different craft. And I think a lot of it really falls down to Andrea Romano doing voice direction, and it just seemed like it was on autopilot this time.
This movie made me think of a lot of bigger issues. I don't know if we want to get into those now or later.
Later.
Let's talk about the film, and then I'll talk about what I was really thinking about while I was watching this. But so the story is somewhat related, although not really, to the original comic story. The original comic story, Bruce Wayne is in London to try to reconnect with Batman is in London to reconnect with his Bruce Wayne persona. And there he runs into the Talia trying to get the Man-Bat serum from Kirk Langstrom so she can inject her ninjas, and she actually does, and she fights a horde of, I don't know if you recall from back then, but he was fighting those ninja Man-Bats, and it was all kind of fun and thrust-buckling. And
well, because it was an amazing sequence because Grant Morrison had it at a pop art gallery.
Right. Yes.
And so the Biff Bam Pals were in the comic, but they were in there as physical art pieces that were scattered about during the fight.
Right, which it was really brilliant. Great story, and then at the end it's revealed that he had a son named Damian. That's the end of the story. Here, only the fact that there are Man-Bats, as well as Talia and her ninjas, that's really where the similarities end. Although she is trying to get the serum, it's basically
At this point, Deathstroke is really the main villain for some reason.
You guys noticed that the opening sequence was completely ripped off from The Matrix?
I did not notice that.
There are music cues that are similar to the music cues from The Matrix. There's a music cue where Ra's al Ghul takes a stance, fighting stance.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And the music cue rises up, and I'm like, that's The Matrix? And then a bullet shoots at him, and it goes bullet time, and he hits it away with his sword. I'm like, wow, they're stealing from The Matrix. And then the next shot is somebody in the helicopter with the Gatling gun. I'm like, oh, just like Morpheus in The Matrix.
Huh. And then
it was strange.
And this one, Ra's al Ghul, Ra's al Ghul, because they changed the way they say his name with every every movie or whatever. He's sort of like a samurai in this one, but
he's really old.
It was. Extra. I mean, there wasn't really a story. There was no need for Deathstroke to be there. I couldn't even tell you what the plot. There wasn't an overall plot.
Well, it seemed like what they were trying to, like, you know, since this is part of a larger continuity now, and they're trying to set up this new world in the films, and not just have these sort of one-offs. It seemed like they were setting up, okay, now we're going to introduce the new Robin, and this is sort of what happens with it. There's no real arc here in terms of, because I thought maybe they're going to try to do, you know, Bruce learning how to be a father. I thought that too.
Yeah.
And, you know, but there's a whole sequence in here where Robin is off fighting Deathstroke and Batman's just hanging out in the Lazarus pool with Talia. Just sit her in there. You know how the Lazarus pool works. And then go help your son who's getting stabbed in both of his arms with katanas.
Yeah, this was also one of the bloodier ones.
It really is.
Oh, it was really, really bloody.
A lot of sword fighting and getting cut with swords. And
yeah. Slade has two eyes at the beginning of the movie. I'll say that.
Yeah.
And although apparently
Damien takes
apparently,
care of one.
You can be too hurt for the Lazarus pit, which I was never aware of. But it just is a lot of really...
They said... during Judd Winnick's Jason Todd stuff, they mentioned, or I guess it was Jeff Loeb who wrote the original Hush, Jason Todd coming back, they mentioned that the reason they couldn't use the Lazarus Pit because Jason's head was bashed in.
Interesting.
I remember that.
Well, this was, you know, this was...
Lazarus Pit doesn't follow any logical rules. I mean, let's just be honest.
I'm going to put science to it, damn it.
it's a lava that resurrects you.
Yeah, the screenplay...
Sit over there while I bring home my lab and try to make bats.
The screenplay for this was written by Joe R. Lansdale, who I know through prose novels, but he's also apparently has written a bunch of four or five episodes of the original Batman the Animated Series, and you know some other stuff. He's written comics like Jonah Hex, and he has a martial arts background, so I guess that's where maybe a lot of the samurai stuff comes in and a lot of swordplay. And maybe a little bit of the brutality because his prose style, he's known for splattercore, right. Just really bloody, gory kind of fiction. And this one, I mean, it's PG-13, and it kind of pushes the envelope there. It's weird tonally because it's also, I think, probably the first Batman animated thing where someone said, like, sperm donor. And that just kind of threw me off.
Can we talk about that for a second? Because, you know, the DC movies have been, I would say, increasingly more violent. But
yeah,
sexual stuff has always been kind of sidelined. You know, Wally West would make his comments about Wonder Woman or whatever. But in this, we have Batman not only called a sperm donor, but Talia basically admits to date raping him.
Right.
In front of her kid.
She totally does, yeah.
She says, hey, I drugged you. And then had sex with you, but it wasn't bad, right? And Batman kind of goes, nah, it was fine. And then she tries to have sex with him again, and Batman's like, yeah, I'm not really in the mood after you just told me to date rape me. And then she pulls back a curtain and Damien's right there. He's been standing there the whole time.
Yeah,
it's a really weird movie.
And not okay.
Not in a good way.
I think Connor's at a point where it's like, it's not even worth analyzing because it was just such a mess. That's what it sounds like.
I can't.
There was nothing to hold on to here. Yeah. There was no story. There was no tight plot to follow. The voice acting on two of the main characters was really bad. And there was just nothing to hang my hat on to try to enjoy.
Ostensibly, it's about drilling Lazarus fluid out of the North Sea, I think. They're just off Scotland, and there's like pipes full of Lazarus stuff, and I don't know.
Kind of a cool concept.
They don't really have the character arc. And so to the point where I said the ending where they're, you know, it's the point where Damian has to decide whether he's going to go with his mother or if he's going to go with Batman. And mom is, you know, sailing away and he's there on the cliff with his father. And can I drive the Batmobile? And it's like they had no idea what to do there. Yeah. And so let's just have a joke. And it went to the end credits and it was just, woof. That was just rough.
Yeah.
Neither of you guys have mentioned Killer Croc.
Yeah.
He was Killer Croc
in the movie. He was in here twice. He got an upgrade with a tail that did not work like a crocodile tail.
No.
I've seen a crocodile, not how the tail works. Doesn't wrap like that. Can't get ripped off that easily.
Well, it got ripped off because it wasn't really his. It was growth.
Listen, I can't turn off the haupting. I have to haupt things.
It's reticulated, right? And it shouldn't be reticulated. It should just be able to go back and forth, right? Like left and right?
Actually, it's for swimming propulsion, not for like grasping things. Not like,
they don't grab beakers and things, generally speaking.
Well, speaking of beakers, if you meet a scientist and he's brought his entire laboratory home, that's a bad sign. Don't trust that dude.
It's a little Walter White.
Like, we have labs at lab buildings for a reason. There's all kinds of infrastructure that goes into having lab building. If the guy is doing something where he feels the need to hide it in his basement, run. Just,
you know, you're experimenting with serums that turn men into bat creatures, so I assume that's the kind of stuff you do at home.
You could get a grant for that, though.
You could definitely get a grant from the Department
of Defense. Does he have a modified bat wing at the end, and he's shooting syringes full of serum at the man bats?
Yeah.
I was like, at that point, I'd sort of like zoned out, and then I was like, wait, what am I watching? And it's Kurt Langstrom.
Can we also talk about the man bat gorilla?
Talk about
I just want to say to whoever's listening. Okay, so there at one point there is a gorilla that has been given the man bat serum, which apparently works on non-mans. It works on any other animal essentially. So it's just a bat serum is what it is. And the gorilla has wings that are entirely too small to lift a gorilla off the ground, but it flies and that's fine. I actually don't mind that. What I want to say is that if anybody from DC is listening and you want me to write the Adventures of Bat Gorilla book, I will do that.
And it'll be accurate. It'll be scientifically accurate.
Oh, so scientifically accurate. Chiroptera and primate will fuse into one. You won't even see the difference. It's going to be great.
All right, let's talk about the sort of larger issues at play here, which do tie back into the film itself. But first of all, let's talk about Damian, because it is this movie about Damian. It's called Son of Batman. Mm-hmm. He's the main character. This movie reminded me that at one point, Damian was one of my favorite characters in comics, and I liked the interplay with him and Alfred when he first moves into the house.
That's the high point of the movie.
And I liked the interplay with him and Nightwing, which made me kind of wish they'd do a Batman-Nightwing, but they wouldn't be able to do that in continuity. We'll get to that in a second. But I liked the interplay between those three characters, and it reminded me how much I enjoyed that in the comics at that time. You know, for a while, he was our favorite character. We loved Grant Morrison's writing of him. He did a great job with the dynamic between Alfred and Dick Grayson and Damian. It was a really fun time. But then eventually, I did a complete 180 on Damian and realized just how much of a mistake it was to introduce him and how sort of toxic the character is, because you can't get rid of him. He's Bruce Wayne's son. You can't just write him off. He's going to have to come back, and which he's in the process of doing now in the comics. And so which means he's always going to be Robin until something major happens in the publishing side and they wipe the slate clean again. But he's always going to be Robin. And that's very limiting to Batman as a character to have his biological son at his side. You can't really do anything to that character.
It sort of becomes the whole story.
Right. It changes.
If you're
Batman's
fighting
story
alongside your son and he's that young and he has that many issues, that is the story. That is what your life is about.
I didn't think it was possible to so critically injure the character of Batman, but Damian kind of does. And I'm watching this movie going, you know, this sort of bleeds into another issue is now that these movies are linked and they're the same continuity, not only are we stuck with these voice actors, so if Deathstroke shows up again, Thomas Gibson will be sure to read it without any inflection, but now Damian is Robin. Now unless they decide to go off script with these incontinuity movies, we're not going to ever get a Tim Drake Robin movie or a movie where he is Robin, or a Dick Grayson movie where he is Robin. It's just, we are now stuck with this status quo. And it's so limiting. And so it made me kind of annoyed that going forward, because I, you know, if you listen to our weekly podcast about the comics, none of us are super thrilled with DC right now, and so the one sort of outlet I had for these characters was these movies.
I think that was one of the most refreshing, and I don't know if it it's a decision, but to, you know, from the beginning to do movies that were one-offs that weren't connected, there, you know, there that is kind of a conscious choice that they're not going to be like the TV series. That is a conscious choice. It's not even a continuation of Batman the Animated Series or Justice League Unlimited or anything like that. They're their own thing, and they were able to do stylistic things with that. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they worked, sometimes they didn't, but they were neat experiments. But now you're stuck with continuity, like that raises, you know, that raises the opportunities for the worst writers and creators involved, and it shackles the best writers and creators involved to the poorer decisions.
And so if you think about now, Jason Amara is always going to be Batman. You know, obviously there are real world considerations. He may decide he doesn't want to do it anymore. He's a human being. He's not a slave. He can walk away. But, you know, none of us liked Alan Tudyk as Superman. So when they do a Superman movie next time, he's going to be a Superman.
Mm.
And that's what really kind of bummed me out while watching this. Not only was it the movie I thought really bad, but I was like, if this is how it's going to be going forward, I'm left with nothing with these characters. I got nothing left. At least every couple, three times a year, or two times a year, I got these movies where, you know, the sort of fun was there and it was the stuff I remember loving. Now it's just like, I don't know what to do.
This feels like such a huge shift, though, because as we said, we liked Justice League War for the most part.
Yeah.
But it's just sort of actually seeing it progress into another movie.
When you drill down on the characters, when it's seven characters on the screen, they all have to share time. You don't really see Jason Amara's reading a Batman too much because he's not really doing anything you notice. But now it's like, oh no, this is not a great choice. And then Alan Tudyk wasn't a great choice. And the characters we actually liked in War are never going to get their own movies, at least not right now. So I don't know. Ryan, am I nuts here?
No. I don't know that it's as dire as – I mean, I hope. I am an optimist, so I will say that I don't think it's as dire. What's the next one? Do we know already?
The next one actually is out of continuity. It's the Batman Arkham City – it's the movie that takes place in the video game world. Yeah.
So great. So you guys are full of shit, and everything's fine. That's what I said.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Listen, can we talk about Arkham? Can we talk about Arkham for a second? I love that they have, in this movie, I'm going back to the Batman and Son, they have a huge establishing shot of Arkham Asylum and cut to Killer Croc is chained to a wall. So I love it. It's like, this is a treatment facility for people with mental disorders, but that guy's an asshole, so just let's chain him to a wall.
Well, it's not that all. I mean, if you recall, you know that the treatment of the mentally ill in this country is not the best, and there's certainly facilities somewhere that aren't going to be that far off. I mean, if you go back to the early 80s and Geraldo Rivera's reports of the barbaric conditions in the mental facilities in the New York area, I mean, it's not that far off reality.
We also don't have giant like alligator people. Like, so I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how they would treat giant alligator people.
Listen, Paul. Listen, you're north of the Mason-Dixon line. You don't know what goes on. Okay, I've lived in the South. I've lived in Appalachia. Some of those alligator people are friends of mine. So you just step
off. Good people. Look, they're good people.
They're good people. They just, you know, eat a lot of meat, and that can make a man savage. According to this movie.
So it just. I don't know. I think the idea that now this is the world we're going forward really kind of bums me out.
I don't think it's going to last if it doesn't work, right? I mean, like, do you – here's the thing.
Well, what defines work is sales. So it may not work for me creatively, but it may continue to sell. So that'll be the world going forward, you know?
Yeah, but if the movies creatively aren't as good as we tend to agree that this one – I actually didn't hate this movie, if I'm being honest. Like, as you said, I'm limited – in my outlets for entertainment, but you know, I sat through this and it was fine. But do you honestly think that the quality of this movie will affect sales? And the fact that, like, you know, I got to imagine there are people who listen to this podcast as their metric for whether or not they're going to buy the movie. And so we're essentially saying this wasn't good. We don't want to encourage what is happening in the direction that they're going. So we're essentially saying, don't buy this movie so we can maybe vote with the dollar a little bit. Am I right?
I guess. I mean, you know, it's
so all both of you listening.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm really curious to see how this one does. I mean, I don't know. We don't. All we have are these estimates that show up from this website that, you know, that no one knows how accurate they really are. They're probably not very accurate. But
well, I can say, you know, when we first started doing these, I bought every one of them. I've since, you know, sort of like sold some of them that I don't like as much. I've kept the ones that I like, but the past 3 or 4, I've just rented them. Because there's the trepidation that I'm not going to like it. And honestly, even the ones that I love a whole bunch at the time, I haven't revisited that often. So these are sort of rentals for me. But part of that is the fact that I feel like there's been diminishing returns lately. And there's less chance that you're going to like it the first time.
I recently rewatched just Crisis on Two Earths.
Which is one of the better ones.
Mm-hmm.
It is. And I'm my fiance has gotten really into Justice League. And so I wanted to actually insert that movie into the continuity where it's supposed to be, but wasn't because of network stuff. So
right. That was it tracks pretty closely. But I don't know. Because I was not at all engaged in this story, I started to think about it as a whole because I didn't care to think about what's happening on the screen. And that's sort of where I started going on this is I don't like this particular world. I don't like this sidekick. I don't like these voice actors. You know, Batman's my favorite character. I was very, I know people complain, but I was always happy for a new Batman film. And, you know, now I'm not too excited because the guy that got playing Batman is a great actor otherwise, but not doing a great job with this character in the animated form. And so what do I have to look forward to? You know, that's just sort of bumming me out.
Well, you can take solace in the fact that I'm going to help something now. Fortunately, at the end of this movie, shortly after the movie ends, they'll all die because the way they escaped from the aqueous submarine base area was not safe. And they will probably all get the bend soon.
Get the bends,
and,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
You can't just launch an escape pod and fire a rocket to the surface and survive. That's not how the human body works. So they're dead. It's okay.
And gorillas also, their eyes don't stop glowing when they die. He has like bright red glowing eyes and then they just flicker out.
That's a fact.
Poor flying gorilla creature.
Paul, what are your thoughts on Damien as a character now? He's dead now, but he's clearly coming back. So, like, it's tough for me because as a kid, I grew up reading Batman and Robin comics. And then at a certain point, they just stopped having Batman and Robin team up.
Yeah.
And so you never really got Batman and Robin comics.
Yeah.
You know, Tim, when the entire time Tim was Robin, he barely ever teamed up with Batman. He did a solo book and he teamed up with the Teen Titans and you rarely ever saw him in the Batman book.
And I'll say I'm a Tim Drake guy. That's the Robin that was in when I started reading comics again as an adult. And so here's my thing. And this goes back to what we were talking about. I think Damian as a recurring character in an ongoing series doesn't work for all the reasons that you listed. It's a character that works better if it were like a limited series kind of continuity. And it was in we've said that only a few writers – mostly Morrison, I'd also add Brian Q. Miller, knew how to write that character. And they wrote the character differently. Mm-hmm. Brian Q. Miller used him more as a comedic character, and there's a little bit of tragedy to that. And then Morrison wrote him as a creator-owned character.
Right.
And I think that's where Damian flourishes, if it's just Morrison writing him. When it comes into the larger continuity, he's just the other Robin, and he's petulant. That's his character note, you know, and that diminishes the potency of that character. I wish he was just like a one-off kind of thing.
One context where I do like him, and this is going to sound strange, but hopefully it makes some sort of sense. I really like the future What If with Damian as Batman.
Mm-hmm.
So there was one issue of Batman. It was like, was it Batman 666?
Yeah,
did they actually do that? Yeah. Where it's it's Damian as Batman, and I believe there were other future Justice League characters. One, I love a you gotta love a future story, but two, like seeing Damian having grown into it worked for me. And so it's kind of like it's this awkward period where because he's essentially a 10-year-old kid in perpetuity, that's to me what makes it really difficult. And if you could move him forward organically, and so that he wasn't just a 10-year-old kid anymore, I think that would actually maybe work.
And related to that, as I'm watching it, and, you know, you're seeing Batman and Robin on screen together. And again, just like the comics, you very rarely get a Batman and Robin story in the animated world either. He was hardly in the cartoons, Batman the Animated Series. He was in a little bit, but not very. Not until later on, the later on volumes or whatever the seasons when they
he was off in college for a bit. So
Then they had Tim Drake and Batgirl, and that was a different story. But
they brought in Nightwing.
But that's Nightwing. I'm talking about Robin. So you didn't, you know, as a kid, I grew up in all the 70s comics and 60s comics where it was Batman and Robin in every issue. And so it just bums me out that when I did get it, it was Batman and Damian who is sort of worn out as a welcome because it is kind of a one note character. He's the petulant one, as you said. And again, you know, it's kind of like, okay, we read that for 5 years and now I'm kind of would rather have Tim or someone else back.
Especially at the age that he is, he's just left in this stasis of the awkward period, you know? Like he's
right, and that's why I think it'd be better if they could grow him up.
Tim, it's Tim in Siberia because, you know, Dick is the first. He's Nightwing, and he's the one who's always there. And if you look back on recent Batman stories in the comics, even especially in Snyder's run, you've got Dick Grayson in there, and you've got a little bit of Damian. But Tim is sort of in Siberia now. He's not really Robin. He's never really was Robin according to this continuity. And you know, Jason's the one that failed and died. Tim's Dick is the first, and Damian's the current one. If you're a Tim fan, you know he's basically been non-factored out of the story, all the stories, which is a bummer. Because I liked Tim, even though Dick's my favorite, I you can take that, make that your little.
And I like there being the two of them.
You like Dick, but Tim's your favorite.
Dick is my favorite. You can make that your meme or whatever you want to do with that. But
one thing I did laugh at, and I was unsure at the beginning of this movie. It wasn't even clear. Okay, are they going to make it so that Damian is the first Robin? Because that's weird, but I could see them going with it. And so I was unclear, and then there's that scene where Batman tells Alfred that they're having a sleepover, which is weird for Batman to say in general.
Right. Weird for anyone to say at that age.
Well, Batman is kind of an overgrown child.
He is.
But Batman doesn't specify if it's like a Vicky Vale, Selina Kyle type sleepover, or if it's another Robin.
Right.
And I like that, you know, Alfred just assumes, okay, he's bringing home another small boy that he's going to make Robin, so I'll just go ahead and prepare the guest room. So it's like, this has clearly happened 3 or 4 times.
Do I prepare the Robin guest room, or do I get the lubricants and whips out for the other kind of sleepover? He doesn't really know.
And the special bat suit.
Right, so he doesn't know which closet to raid for the sleepover. But
I don't like that we'd never see the game room. Like, we get introduced to the bedroom, and there is a game room down that way, but we never see it, so we never know what that is. I like the idea of Alfred going and shopping for things that he thinks that, like, a 10-year-old boy would like. Or it's, like, all of Bruce's old stuff, so it's, like, a Atari and, you know, it's not
good. Well, apparently, at one point, Twister. Damien's out in the yard slicing through the shrubbery with Bruce's grandfather's sword, which is a samurai sword.
Yeah, it's a katana. I was like, why does he have
grandfather had one because he got in the war.
Brought one home, yeah.
Yeah.
I had that thought process. It was like, maybe he brought it back from the war, I guess.
You know,
so I'm doing
Bruce's
the math
parents were killed before World War II for being. Anyway.
I don't know. I hope everyone doesn't think we are spiraling here, but it was very disappointing for me on a lot of levels. I'm going to go harsher than Ryan, say I did not like it at all. And what it did was it brought up a lot of issues I have with these lately that I've been sort of not happy about and haven't had a chance to talk about really in that just the general direction these are going in. So we'll see.
Saying you don't like that Batman gets date raped.
I didn't like him very much about this at all except for a couple of scenes and a couple of characterizations.
I like the Alfred stuff.
Yeah, the Alfred stuff was pretty great.
The moment where, you know, he's like, well, you only have one servant, and Batman's like, he's not a servant, he's my friend, doesn't have the, you know, resonance that you want it to have.
Because of the acting?
Because of the acting.
Yeah.
Also, not Alfred's acting, but... Like,
Batman.
They should hug or something.
Right.
They should have fist bumped. But
I know Batman's not a hugger, but come on.
So we will be back for the next one, which is Batman Arkham something.
Guardians
Arkham
of the something. Galaxy.
Arkham something. It's the film taking place in the video game, which game I've never played. Paul, you've played it,
yes,
right?
Yes, they're good.
So we'll talk about
that. I have played it.
It Ryan should be brutal and violent.
Perfect.
So it's probably like where
Joker story, so that
with
makes sense.
An excessive amount of Riddler.
It's called Batman Assault on Arkham.
Right. So we'll be back for that one. They have not announced the one after that yet, have they? I looked it up. They haven't done that yet. So that's unusual. But we'll see what happens there. Go to the comments section of fmboy.com. You can talk about the movie there. Out of this show, you'll be able to tell us if we were wrong and dumb or if we were right on the money. I'm sure
you could be right and dumb.
Someone for both of those or all of them in between. Tell us what you thought. If you liked it, hey, cool. I'm awesome. I'm glad someone liked it. Ryan said he liked it. Kind of, so...
Yeah, there is its moments, you know. But.
If you did like it, tell us why. It'd be interesting to see people's thoughts on that. And in the meantime, we'll be back for the next animated film. The Brain Trust will be back. Paul and I will be back probably for X-Men. We haven't decided about that yet or who's going to do that show exactly, but...
I can do real movies too, Connor.
Well, now that you're back in the United States with... You can be brought in for other stuff. Now we've
just
got
saying.
You.
I don't know if I want to unleash Haupting on an X-Men movie with time travel and speed and
no,
all kinds of stuff.
I think the X-Men are the least helpable of all the superhero teams. Mutants are a real thing, Paul. I know you have your issues with them from a eugenic level, but mutants are real.
Maybe we'll reconvene the Brain Trust for that movie. We haven't decided yet. We'll let you know. In the meantime, don't forget to check out our weekly Pick a Leak podcast where me and Paul and Josh Flanagan talk about the week's books. All that's found at ifanboy.com. Until next time, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Ryan, and Great White Sharks don't go that deep.
Can we all just fist bump?
Oh, I'd love to. What? You know why? Because you're not my servant, Connor. You're my friend.
How can I try to explain when I do, he turns away again? It's always been the same old story. From the moment I could talk, I was ordered to listen. There's a way, and I know that I have to go.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.